I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe, and I am thrilled and excited and happy that you're here with me again this afternoon. You know, the things that go on from day to day are almost unbelievable, aren't they? I mean, we sit back and some things you could predict. You know, you can say, okay, we know that the weather's going to get warmer. You know, summer's coming. That's a pretty easily predictable thing. It happens every year. But this pandemic, this virus, this COVID-19 ongoing shutdown, lockdown, or whatever, is very unpredictable. We don't know who's going to open up, what states are going to open up, what towns are opening up. We don't know what the people are going to do. You know, after all, it is we the people, right? It's not the we the government, not we the governor, not we the mayor. It's we the people. Now, I am not an anarchist. My point being is that all of these people are elected officials. They were elected to represent us, not to rule over us. That has been confused over the years. I mean, you watch some of the political figures that are out there, and they certainly are lording their position over everyone. Now, I would like to think that in the best of all worlds, they're doing it because they honestly believe that their opinion, their perception of what we should do here in this virus epidemic is the best thing to do for safety and health of everyone. But this argument has been picking up steam. It's been growing for the past couple of weeks, and we're seeing states like Florida start to open their beaches. They're starting to let people go back into their restaurants. I think 25% capacity, which is, hey, that's better than no percent capacity, right? Imagine how many businesses out there would love to do 25% of their business that they're doing zero now. So I applaud that. You know, the other side of the argument, which we can't deny, we can't say that people are just crazy because they want to stay locked down forever. Although I think lots of people are just so panicked, so scared to death. I mean, the comments that you hear, you know, you see somebody post, we went to the beach yesterday and we did ABC. And oh my gosh, you're killing people. You're killing people. Well, I don't know that you're killing anybody, but I understand very clearly that if there's a resurgence of the virus and now everyone's back out again, that of course more people are going to get sick, and we know that there is a percentage of people who will die from this virus. But I don't know if I agree completely with the idea that we should stay shut down forever until it goes away completely, because we know it's only a matter of time until, you know, the summer will go by. The virus will most likely, if it follows normal patterns of viruses, it will back down over the summer. There'll be some type of herd immunity. And then in the fall, when viruses come back, October, November, December, you know, in the colder weather, when they make a comeback, there's a very strong possibility that the corona COVID-19 will come back. What effect it will have on all of us when it comes back, that's something to consider now. Because you got to look at it and say that that's less than, what, 6 months away now? Maybe 6 or 7 months away at the most. We have two big things going to happen in the fall. Big election coming up, right? And the return of this virus and the regular flu season. Are they going to call for another lockdown? Can we do this 2 years in a row? Is this something that we do every year now? Every time the virus comes around or some new virus comes around, we lock down to prevent its spread. I don't know. I don't know that we can survive as a republic doing that. We don't have money to come up with $10 trillion every year just to keep people in their houses and fed. And that's really no way to live. So my sensibilities here are that I don't want to get sick, nor do I want anybody in my family to get sick. Or, you know, anybody else for that matter. But the reality is we cannot continue on this path much longer. And what we're starting to see out there in the world, as these states start to come online, and then other places are not coming online, and the people are starting to reach their limit. Like, I'm in New Jersey here, and the governor just came out very recently and said, schools will now be closed for the rest of the school year. Okay, maybe that is a good idea. Maybe that is a good idea. I mean, we only have, you know, 2 months left, so maybe we give it a little bit more time. Because once them kids come into school, they're not going to be able to social distance. Have you seen a hallway in a high school? When the bell rings, there's no social distancing there. People are on top of one another. So if there was a resurgence of it, it would probably hit our schools. So I'm not opposed to the idea of shutting them down for the rest of the year. And let's see if we can get through this, get a virus vaccine so that we can all take it and see where it goes going forward. Now, it's very unfortunate for all the high school seniors out there and college seniors who are graduating. They're not going to have that big pomp and circumstance. But I got to tell you, I'm seeing people doing some pretty neat things. I mean, around here in Jersey, I saw there was a principal, and he's having all the kids come to the high school onto the football track, 20 feet apart, no guests other than their mother and father and their caregiver, whoever, and the kids are just going to walk around the track and be handed their diploma and walk back to their car and leave. At least they get to be at the school and get their diploma. You know, there's something to that ritual that we really need to think about, each and every one of us. Now, how about some of the statistics that are coming out about this virus now? As more and more testing is being done, we're finding out that they think that maybe 10 times more people have already been exposed to the virus than current thinking, which means the virus was probably here earlier than, you know, January. It was probably here. I remember a lot of people complaining about really, really bad flu-like symptoms in December. You know, they had a cold they just couldn't get rid of. You've probably heard of people who have said that they had that. I don't recall that I had that, but I know my daughter did. My daughter was in college in New York City, and her boyfriend, who attends school in New Jersey, in North Jersey, they both were really, really sick a couple weeks apart from each other with very strong flu-like symptoms. So they probably had the COVID. I mean, my daughter travels in the subways all the time, going back and forth to internships she goes to and to school and all the things you do in the city. Same thing for her boyfriend. You know, he's traveling subways to come and see her. She's going to see him. So they both probably had this at some point this past year. I'm going to guess there's a pretty good chance when we're looking at a number like 10 times the amount of people that we know have it or probably were infected. There's a lot of controversy out there, and that's part of the problem. You know, fake news. Fake news wants to keep us panicked. Fake news wants to hurt President Trump any way they can. We know that that's an absolute fact now. We can't deny that, whether you're on Trump's side or not. I mean, even if you're not a Trump guy or girl, you'd have to sit back and go, well, we know, hasn't it been proven to us by this point that the media absolutely lies about anything they can say about Trump? I mean, somebody did a study the other day in the New York Post or the Washington Post that there was like 97 negative stories about Trump since January and none positive. Now, you mean to tell me the guy hasn't done anything good? The shutdown that he did, no travel ban, the travel ban he had against China, that wasn't good? That didn't help us? I think it absolutely did. So there's a lot of controversy out there. I saw two doctors the other day on social media. If you go look, you'll probably see them. Two young guys. They are virologists, for lack of a better term. I don't know their exact discipline in the medicine world, but they deal with germs and bugs at the viral level. And basically what they were saying is the whole problem with all of this quarantining of ourselves is that the way the human immunosystem works is that it has to be exposed to germs and viruses. Now, how many of you were told when you were a little kid, the parents would say, well, go out and you'd play in the dirt and you'd play in the mud and that's how you'd build up an immunity to things. Well, turns out that, like a lot of old wives' tales, are probably true. So these two immunologists, I think that's what they were saying that the longer we stay away from each other, the longer we stay quarantined, our immune system is going to drop in efficiency and ability to protect us. That's just a natural occurrence when there's no germs, no viruses around you. And I don't mean the corona. I mean every other day kind of germs and virus that we come in contact with that doesn't kill us every other day of the year. The longer we stay away from that and from each other, the weaker our immune systems are going to get. And then when we come back together, guess what's going to happen? Even minor little things are going to cause lots of problems. So that's something to think about. But is it true? Is it true what those doctors said? Don't we have like 19 other doctors will come out and say the exact opposite? And then they'll make a statement that this is the worst virus in the world, and if you come out, everyone's going to die. And then you'll see more doctors will come out and say the opposite of what the opposite said. So we really don't know what we're getting here. We know we're getting politically biased news that serves a point and to keep us scared. And I know we've gone over this, but let's run it down again. What good does keeping us in... Now, if we had to stay in for 5 weeks or 6 weeks, we absolutely had to stay in to protect everyone so people didn't die. More people didn't die. Okay, that's what we did. We did what we were supposed to do. We listened to our governments. We stayed in and we did the right things. But staying in longer than that, what is the value in that? Who benefits? You know, it's one of those things, follow the money. Well, who benefits from us staying in longer than we have to? I'm not saying that we didn't have to. I'm going to say we did. But who benefits if we stay in longer than we have to? Some people will say it is to make sure that we're healthy. Okay, there's one theory. The other theory is what? That the longer we stay in, the more damage there is to the economy, the more likely it is that the economic downturn is going to be longer and harder than if we had come out of the lockdown, say on May 1st, and went back to work. So if we stay until June 1st, it's going to get 30 days worse, which is compounded. Numerically, it's compounded with the dollars and cents that are lost every day. Businesses that can only go one more week can't go three more weeks. They can go one more week, and then they're done. They're out of money, right? We see how efficient the governments are. All this unemployment, right? People are unemployed now. Okay, sorry, you got to be furloughed. I can't pay you. Get unemployment. Well, you can't even get the machines to work. The computers here in New Jersey, almost all the systems are shut down. People can't get in. They're waiting hours and hours and hours on hold, and then they get disconnected. So the system is not really set up to do what's right by us. And it's probably going to get worse as time goes by. So who benefits? Follow that trail. Who benefits by the economy being really miserable, people being scared to death, now in a panic? They need stuff, you know, food, money, rent, medical care, and they can't get it from their employers anymore. Who are they going to turn to? They're going to turn to the government. And which party in the government running for election is going to say, we're going to give you everything. We're going to give you $600 extra in unemployment. We're going to give illegal aliens $600. You need an extra? We're going to give you an extra $2,000. We'll print even more money. We will do whatever we need to do to keep you healthy and happy. Now, people are going to panic. They're going to get scared. And they're going to look and go, okay, Trump and the Republicans are saying the economy will rebuild. We need patience. We need to dig in hard. We need to work hard. And it'll come back. The Democrats, on the other hand, are going to say, this was a turning point for our country. We now have to look closer at more government assistance for everything, especially because of what happened here with Corona, because it's coming back. Like right after the election, it's going to be flu season again, and it's coming back. So no matter what we do with this economy, it's going to shut down again next year, and therefore, we need to be prepared. We need Democrats in office to make sure you get what you want. Now, does that sound like a commercial? Sound like I just did a commercial for them? Well, I think that's part of some people's thinking and planning. That they're looking at, hey, the longer we let this go, the more damage it happens, the better chance we have of being elected. You know, especially even if President Trump does get reelected as, you know, the president, maybe all the down ballots, the local elections, you know, where people go, hey, that guy, I know that guy, you know, that girl, she's the congresswoman, and she says she's going to make sure we have money. And then they turn the Senate and the House over to the Democrats. Well, you know what happens? They come up with the next hoax against President Trump. You know, he really did mess up this coronavirus and kill so many people. And now we're going to have an impeachment. And guess what? This time he's convicted and out he goes. And 2 minutes after he goes out the door, they'll start on Mike Pence. Right? They'll start on Mike Pence. Because they will have the power, and they're not afraid to use their power. See, that's the difference. You see, the Republicans, they have no backbone for the most part, and I don't mean all of them, my Republican friends that are out there, but a lot of these politicians, they have 95 different messages. They have no guts to stand up and do something, right? The Democrats, on the other hand, you know, if it wasn't that most of their stuff I don't agree with because it's not really pro-American for the most part, you know, socialism and all that goes with high taxes and government runs everything. I'm not in favor of that. But the reality is you'll see those people will stick together. The Democrats will have a united message, and they will pound that message every single day. They will come out. They will fight. They will do trickery. They will lie. They will connive. They'll change the rules. Look what they did when Trump was elected. Right? Aren't we just seeing so much more of that coming out now, finding out what happened to General Flynn? Right? We're finding out how they really made stuff up. I mean, it's looking really bad right now. So where's all this going to go? We're looking at, some big changes probably coming. And they're coming at us quicker than I think we're ready, because this summer is going to go fast. And next thing you know, it's going to be the heat of the election season. And if we don't get out of this lockdown soon, I don't know that we have time to pull the economy out, or at least show signs that the economy is pulling back together and stepping out. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that there's enough pent-up energy out there that once we get going, people will be willing to, do things, refinance their houses, buy houses. I don't know where they're going to get money, but 30 million people laid off. The housing market's going to take a hit for a while. It's going to be tough for a while for everybody. And that's going to play a role in this election. Are you ready for that? Are you starting to think now how you're going to talk about that to your friends and to your family? Because believe me, it's going to get heated and hotter and hotter and hotter to the point that, well, you don't care about people. At least the Democrats are offering an answer for now. They're going to give us money that we need to live. Now, I don't mean for it to sound sarcastic. Everybody needs money to live. Lieutenant Joe needs money to live. We all do. But if that's going to be the rallying cry, that's hard to counteract when people are scared and when they start to lose their homes. Because these mortgage places, they are going to maybe give people some leniency. We've all seen it. Have you seen it in the mail? Comes, if you need a hardship thing, they'll give you a month or two forbearance. They'll put it to the end of the mortgage. Some companies are doing it. It's all wonderful for 1 or 2 months. What are they going to do after 4 or 5 months? Are they going to have that much largesse that they're going to say, you don't have to pay us at all, for this year? That's a business. Mortgage companies are a business like everything else. They have expenses. They have bottom line. They have investors. This cannot go on forever. And we're going to start to see some of that crumble. There's a big movement now. AOC, AOC, Ocasio-Cortez is out there trying to lead this movement of, stop rent payments. People shouldn't have to pay rent. Well, rent is very expensive. When you're not working, it's hard to pay that rent. And then the landlord, what are they going to do, throw you out? Well, there's a moratorium for 3 months. They can't throw you out. But you know what kind of pressure that's going to put on people to know that that's going on in the background, that they could lose their apartment and house and they have no job? Do you see the perfect storm that starts to swirl around this? That even though people like President Trump, even though begrudgingly they might like President Trump and he's been a guy who's actually gotten things done, but when it comes down to it, I'm going to get thrown out of my house or my apartment. At least the Democrats will print money and keep me in my house. Right? So that's where I wanted to at least open the conversation today here on Chasing Justice. Get you start to thinking about it. What do you believe is going to happen? Where do you see this going? And how soon do you want to start up? If you want to put it off because you're panicking, you have to ask yourself, why am I panicking? Is it because you think you're going to die or someone else is going to die? I get it. Then you should stay in. You should stay home. You should quarantine yourself. The rest of us have to take chances. I have to drive to New York a lot. I take my chance on the Parkway, the Turnpike, the Verrazano Bridge. I take my chances every single day that I don't get killed. But it's a chance. I got to do it. I got to go to work. And I know this is a little bit different, but we all have to take chances at some point. All right? This is Lieutenant Joe with Chasing Justice. I will be back in a minute.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, all right, all right, all right. My ode to Matthew McConaughey. Well, we're back here on Chasing Justice for another beautiful segment. Okay, so in our first part of the show, what do we talk about? What's going on with the coronavirus? The mortgages? Are people going to let you stay in your house if you don't have a job? Were you panicking? I think we covered a lot of that. Let's take a look for a minute about the return. Right? I want to look at the return. The return from COVID-19. So recently, I wrote an article that's being published in Campus Safety Magazine, and I'm going to see if I can get it up on the platform here at AmericaOutloud.com. I do a lot of work with Campus Safety Magazine. I write for them. I do presentations. I teach. I'm on their board of experts for school safety and security, that kind of thing. And this article I wrote in conjunction with a very experienced school psychologist, Megan Longo. Now, I worked with Megan at one of the school districts I worked in after retirement from law enforcement, and I found her to be a brilliant woman who really has a lot of insight and deep connections to the children and the parents in the school districts. So my question was this. When we start to come out of the lockdown, this has been an extremely stressful period for all of us. Now, when you talk about stress, there's the negative stress, and then there's the U stress, you know, EU stress or U stress. That's the positive stress. So how is this lockdown going to affect lots of people? Well, chances are we see it's probably going to affect them more negatively than positively, because it was a restriction. It's scary. There's no particular end to this in sight, and the news just keeps pumping it up, pumping it up, pumping it up. So we have to look at this, and that was my concern. I said, okay, when the kids do come back to school, and some parts of the country, they may get back in school before the end of this year, and in other parts of the country, like New Jersey, like I said, the governor recently here said, nobody's coming back to school until September. So that means there's no summer college classes on campus, there's no high school classes in the summer, probably no sports, this, that, and the other thing for a while. That kind of negative impact on people can cause mental health concerns. So my concern was, when the kids start to come back, are the schools all prepared for the potentially more violence than before? Now, we haven't had school shootings for a while because it's been quiet. But as we come back from this, is it something that we need to look at potentially more dangerous? How about our workplaces? You know, people lost their jobs. Once those businesses open up, you're going to get some of these disgruntled people who could start showing up at that business, be very angry at the owner. And I'm not trying to scare anybody here. I'm hoping that this doesn't happen at all. I'm hoping everyone is just so happy to get back to the world that once this is over, we all run out in the street and, embrace from a safe distance, of course, and we get back into the world and everyone's happy and there is no violence. But we have to look at all contention. So when I look at problems like this, I say, if it goes well and there are no problems, well, that takes care of itself. There's nothing to really worry about, right? If it goes bad and there is more violence in society in general or in schools, then we need to be prepared for it. We need to start asking the questions. We need to start thinking about what is it we can do when the kids come back? What should we be preparing for right now? What should we be looking at? As these school administrators who are still working, there's just nobody in the buildings. A lot of them are working remotely, like a lot of people are. So this Megan Longo, who is, like I said, a brilliant woman, she helped me with a lot of these questions. She gave me her insight into what she thinks could go on. I also spoke to Dr. Richard Ponton, a PhD, that I know Dr. Ponton very well. He's a national speaker on all kinds of mental health-related family matters. And Dr. Ponton, the question I asked him was, how much is it the media coverage of this going to affect, you know, people and kids? And he says, listen, the CDC says limit your amount of media coverage that you pay attention to with this because it will be frightening. I think that's pretty obvious, right? And if you have nervous parents who are home, particularly nervous people, and they're getting scared to death. Well, that's going to filter down to the kids. The kids are going to hear that, feel that, see that, and they're going to be very uncomfortable. So I think that can amp things up. So we got workplace potential violence, we got school potential violence, and we need to start looking at it. So that article, I'm going to see if we can get up on the America Out Loud site sooner rather than later. But it's been a work that I've been trying to get together for the last couple of weeks, because I think it's important questions we all should ask. If you are any way associated with your school or your child's school or a college that someone in your family goes to, you should reach out and find out for them. Are they planning? Are they preparing how to deal with these things when they come back? So I spoke to John Spaltoff. John, a great guy. He's a superintendent here in New Jersey. And I know John very well. We worked together for a while. And I said to him, what are you doing now? Are you paying attention to these kids? You know, the kids that you knew were a problem before the shutdown? Are you monitoring them? And what about the kids you don't expect to be a problem who could have latent violent tendencies, right? So he says, no, they're doing weekly reach outs to all the students and their families. Hey, how's everybody doing? What's the temperature going on? They're trying to maintain contact. I mean, John is just really an outstanding superintendent who really cares about his kids and the parents and everybody there. So I thought that was pretty hopeful. Megan Longo gave a great list of information of what she thinks everybody can do to try and prepare for this. And I'm going to go over a couple of them. And some of those things are kind of common sense. You would say, okay, I get that's common sense. But other ones are really, really smart, what things that we're talking about. So when I reached out to Megan, I said, okay, will the anxiety of COVID-19 shutdown cause students and staff to be more agitated, potentially violent when they return to class, and why? And Megan responds that, you know, there's no absolute profile of a student or staff member who has the potential to be violent, but there are known risk factors. Right now, the world is in a state of constant unknowns. Our daily lives and routines are incredibly impacted and disrupted by this COVID-19 situation. The uncertainty of the future can lead to increased feelings of fear. Lack of control over the situation can lead to feelings of helplessness. Being forced to be physically apart can cause a sense of isolation. Even if the student or staff member is not personally affected by COVID-19, the media is constantly expressing that loss that everyone has, that people are dying, they're losing families, and you can lose people next. It's a sense of combined grief. Now, we know one of the while there is no profile of a school shooter or a workplace shooter or someone else who does violence in school or work, while there is no profile, you can't say, here's the 9 things that these people do and there's your shooter. What we can do is we can identify some traits. And one of the most powerful traits that we can see is the sense of isolation. When we find these school shooters and we go back and investigate everything about them, we find that these kids often feel very isolated from everyone else in their school. They don't feel a part of the school. They don't feel like they're important to the school or the school is supportive of them. So that's an important thing. You know, we have to make sure that we have programs in place to look at that kind of thing and make sure if we do have kids who are on the fringe, we reach out to them, make sure that they stay connected even during the school year. You know, stay connected, keep together with people, and try and get that sense of camaraderie between everyone. Now, kids are kids. We all went to school at some point, and we know that not everyone's going to like everyone. That's just the truth. But I think these generations that I've seen in my own kids going through is that these kids, I think, are probably more open to accepting kids who are different than probably many generations earlier. And when I say different, I don't mean, you know, kids that might be gay and in the closet. They're very open to that, as I think most of society is now. You know, who does that matter? It doesn't matter who you love, right? You love who you love. Everybody just back off and leave people alone, you know. But I think that these kids, these generations now, are much more open to the kid that is just different in that they have different thoughts about things. They dress differently because they're trying to express themselves differently. Where in past generations, those kids might have been picked on a lot more, you know, to the point that they were ostracized, and you could hide yourself amongst the crowd by you picking on that person too at the same time, right? This way, you know, it's everyone's attention is on that person, and you know your weaknesses are hidden. So I think that's a thing we need to look at. And I would encourage all of you and your schools and everybody to really pay attention here and see what you can do to make sure that your schools are prepared and they're talking about it. So another thing, here's my concern. What about the kids who have a terribly abusive home life? Their home lives are horrible, and now they've been stuck there for months, right? Maybe with abusive parents or something. All right, so what about the students who had this? So Megan Longo says, our most at-risk students who have the potential to be emotionally impacted by the shelter in place or the lockdown are those who see the school system as their refuge from a dysfunctional home life. The New York Times reported movement restrictions to stop the spread of the coronavirus may make violence in the home more frequent, more severe, and more dangerous. Are we seeing that? We are seeing an increase in domestic violence. We are seeing an increase in child abuse calls because people are stuck home together, you know, endlessly stuck home. And even though everybody's joking about it a lot, there's a lot more drinking going on. Have you been drinking more at your house? You know, usually have a cocktail here and there a couple days a week. And now you're drinking like getting earlier in the day, especially on the weekends. I'm not saying we're doing that here at Lieutenant Joe's house. But the point is that alcohol is flowing more freely because people have all day and nothing to do. So that's certainly a contributor to violence. When people are emotionally upset, they're trapped in, and now old frustrations can explode. So we need to pay attention to domestic violence and see what goes on. One of the most important ones that I wanted to touch here is, you know, how my question was, how can the isolation of the shutdown affect those prone to violence already, and how can it affect those potential latent tendencies to violence, all right? This is probably the key of why I wanted to put this piece together, this article, and get it out there. I did a webinar last week with a couple of other companies who were sponsoring it, and that was really, this was the question, you know, could this COVID lead to more violence when we go back to school? And we had over 1,000 people, school people, sign up to be a part of this webinar within a week. We had an overflow of several thousand. So we're going to be doing it again, but it just points out, I think there's a nerve here that people are thinking about this, they are concerned about it. So this question, you know, how can the isolation cause those kids that we know have a problem to act out? How many kids we don't know have a problem that it was always been underlining, it never would have come out except for this stress? And Megan gave me an answer. It came from the NASP School Safety and Crisis Response Committee of 2020. And she said, during extended school closures, schools may see an increase in student mental health concerns, anxiety, depression, and substance abuse. This may include an increase in existing symptomology or the development of new concerns. So this means kids who were a problem before, this could make it worse. And kids that were never a problem, this could certainly lead to them having more difficulties and potentially being violent. Student, family, and community stressors are very likely to increase in frequency, duration, and intensity during times of extended school closure. Some examples were, you know, increased isolation, increased financial stress on the family, reduced supervision, increased connection to unsafe individuals in the home, domestic violence and abuse like that, decreased involvement in pro-social school staff members and peers. See, school provides a lot of the good things for the kids to get along. They have clubs, they got friends, they have teachers that they trust. And we can all argue about the influence that school has negatively on our kids. But in this areas, these are positive things. They're part of the band. They're part of the football team. They're part of the cross-country team. They're in all these different clubs. It gives them an outlet and an expression with their friends. And those are all positive things that really can help them. So when we look for these things, we have to make sure our schools are doing exactly the right thing all the time to look at this stuff. Okay, so that's what I wanted to cover about that article. I think you'll find it very interesting. I know it was impactful for me to ask a question, get a better understanding of this so that I can help schools and businesses out there be prepared when people start coming back in droves, that we're ready to do the right thing and we're ready to make observations of people who might be having difficulties, saying things on social media, posting things, writing and drawing so that we can get to it early and try and help people before there's any violence in our society that we really, really don't need. Okay, so let's turn our attention now to the world. Now, this is normally where my Lieutenant Joe's pages of outrages would come screaming into the fore. So I'm going to try and take it a little easier. I'm going to try and go a little easier into it. We saw Kim Jong-un, right? He popped up into the world again. Here was this all this speculation for the longest time that he had was involved in a botched surgery and that he died and he wasn't going to live through it. And it turns out he probably had some kind of health concern. I know they said he had a stent or something, you know, in his heart, that because, you know, he's a heavy set guy. He smokes heavily. He drinks heavily. And he probably has health concerns. Maybe he has diabetes, all kinds of things that could really mess up a human body. And he might have had a very bad episode. But the other day, he popped up. And there he was, you know, looking at everybody with that goofy haircut of his. So he's out there. But it was interesting to see the reaction of the reporters and other people in the media. And while I bash them all the time, sometimes they have to ask questions and they get things, I don't want to say right, but they ask and cover the right thing. So where is Kim Jong-un? All they talked about was he must be dead. He must be dead. And therefore, who's going to take over? You know, it's like a big soap opera. Everything's a big soap opera to a lot of those people. But the speculation was that his sister, who they say is iron-fisted, right? Iron-fisted, that she was going to take over and be the ruler of the Hermit Kingdom there in North Korea. But I don't know if that really would be the plan. I mean, he does have an older brother. Kim Jong-un has an older brother who was bypassed by his father specifically so that Kim Jong-un would be the leader, because I guess they didn't think that young man was appropriate. But I don't know that that's how the line of succession would go. Now, if this, you figure he just saw all this and realizes, hey, if something does happen to me, there may be a power coup in the background to try and take over and wrest control of the country from his family. So maybe at this point, you'll see another one of those purges go on in the back behind the scenes, that the sister will be brought in closer to the power base. And anyone that they're concerned about, you know, won't just be fired, they'll be fired on. You know what I'm saying? They'll end up disappearing off the earth. They'll kill them to get rid of them, because that's how those kind of governments work to maintain power. But I thought it was interesting that he was gone. A lot of speculation that he was dead. And I don't know how I felt about that, which is a weird thing to say, because he is a brutal dictator. He's very bad to his people. He's threatened the whole world with these missiles. But there's always consequences to something. You know, that old saying, the devil you know compared to the devil you don't know. So here is this guy that we know likes American celebrities. So American celebrities can talk to him. He does like having a relationship with President Trump, whether it's a real relationship or he just thinks that, hey, the American president can talk to me and I can say things to him and have some world stage time. But we don't know if his sister did take over, that she might be even more repressive. She might even realize, you know, I don't care. They're not going to stop me. Who's really going to have the guts? What's anyone going to do if they decide to launch a couple of missiles? And maybe not with nuclear warheads, but with very, very powerful standard type of warheads, and just see what happens. Maybe they shoot one over to Japan. Maybe they shoot one towards South Korea. It was an accident. Sorry about that. It got out of control and it blew up a military base or an apartment complex or something. What is anyone really going to do? Are we going to go rushing in to North Korea with all of our weaponry and do what? Start a war in there? We know they have nuclear weapons. Will the Chinese, you know, our new best friends who almost killed us all with this virus, our new best friends here, would they swoop into action and see this as an opportunity to cleanse the peninsula of all United States and Western influence? You just don't know. And that's probably one of the most dangerous things, is not knowing what would happen if you removed a guy like this. You know, he's I don't know anything much about him other than what I've read. I don't know that he's a stupid man. But he seems, of all of them, controllable, at least to a degree. And you don't know who would come after him. If someone else, a general, stepped in there and decided that, nope, they're going to tighten down and lock down everything, you could see horrific things that could go on in that country. And how would we actually respond? All right, so we're covering a lot of territory here as we dance around. When we come back, we're going to get to Joe Biden. Oh, yes. We're going to get to Joe Biden. We'll talk a little bit about the other things that are going on in the world, because I'm getting wound up for round three here on Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and with me is the ever-popular Kathleen Pangaro. Kathleen, how are you today?
Hey, how are you?
I'm glad you're here. You know, we're stuck here in quarantine one more day, and we're watching the world go by, and it's nice to have you join me, because I like your opinions, and that's not just because you're my wife, it's because you're a very smart woman.
Because I told you to like them.
Right, and I'm not a stupid man either. Lieutenant Joe's very smart. So did you ever see that cartoon where the wife is looking in the mirror and she says, am I fat? And the husband says, am I stupid? You know, so that's a crazy thing.
Wait a minute, am I fat?
No, you're not fat at all. You're a beautiful woman. All right, so anyway, I'm glad you're here with us. I said we wanted to talk a little bit about Joe Biden. We don't want to go on and on about this guy, but I saw something was really interesting that came up the other day. He apparently, this big Tara Reid accusation is not going away, although the media is not focusing on it like they would if it was Trump. But apparently there are some records that she may have made a complaint. It might have been documented back in the day when she worked for him. And that complaint is in the files and the belongings in the Senate of Joe Biden's records. They have all their records. They keep them forever and ever and ever, right? So it's a historical record of our government. So apparently, I believe Tara Reid had said, hey, if I made that complaint, you should find it in those records and let's see. So Joe Biden apparently wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Senate, the person that keeps track of all those documents, and he made a big show out of, I would like you to search the records and find those records if they exist and bring them out so we could see them. And funny enough, could you believe the Secretary of the Senate says, well, due to Senate rules, a confidential information like that cannot be released to anyone for any reason, even if Mr. Biden is requesting that his own records be released. So no, we will not be releasing those records. Doesn't that sound a little faked up to you, Kathy? Does that sound like a sham?
I don't think they could share the records. What I think the sham is Joe Biden trying to use this letter of intent saying, show my records, knowing they never would.
Right, exactly.
That's the scam.
But my question, if they have records that are in the archives that no one is allowed to look at, why would you put them in the archives?
Right.
Just like a lot of Senate and Congress rules that don't apply to anyone else but them, they pull themselves out of the laws, they don't have to follow the laws. You know, they have this whole thing with sexual harassment where they have a fund where they pay off people who make complaints.
They do not.
Of course they do. Millions of dollars.
And they have a fund to pay off?
Sexual harassment complaints. Of course, that was big in the news. And we were supposed to see all the people who paid money off. And you know what? We never did. We never got to see who had money paid off for them. Isn't that funny? So this seems just like another one of those scams where, you're right, Joe Biden writes this letter, like, I really want the truth
to come
out. I don't
think he actually wrote it. I think he had people write it for him, because I don't think he has that brain that can do that anymore.
They might have put his hand on the pen and they did it for him, or Etch-a-Sketch type of a thing. But I think that's what this was. And I just found it funny in the news that, oh, absolutely, even if he requests his own records be released, they will not be. Why do we have those records then? Who's going to ever look at them? Someday when I'm the president, I want to see what happened in the Senate in 1993. I can go look at that as the president? Ridiculous. But I get the point. He is scared to death, and he doesn't want the truth to come out, but he made a pretty good play. Looks pretty good, right? Because the people who want to believe him, he even asked for the records. He knows there's nothing
in there. That gives the news that are supporting him, they gives them something to put out. Biden says, release the records. You know, that's all people are going to say. You know, that's all they're going to say.
That's all they're going to say. Yeah. And he doesn't want the truth to come out. Now, it's funny how I saw a meme of him the other day on social media, and it's a picture of him looking real smiley and smug, and it says, and just like that, the Me Too movement was dead. Because it's him now, right? And you look at all these people, and it's before they said, we believe her. That was it. The simple, we believe when anyone comes forward to say something happened. Now it's, we will investigate. We will hear her and investigate her claim because it's on the other side. Isn't that funny? Now they have to investigate. But before, they just believed. And if you didn't believe, you must hate women.
And I bet the investigation will take about, 10 months?
Right, and then it'll turn out.
Oh. I know, but he'll already have gone through his election right. process by then.
Well, but the point is, I think he's scared to death. And fear is a big motivator for a lot of people. Mm. So when we'll turn our attention here just to some things you and I have talked about recently. With the, you know, the whole panic, this corona, as we're moving through this again, there is an absolute fever pitch of panic among some of these people. You know, we talked about when I put out that thing on social media and people lost their minds. Oh, my God, you're going to kill people. You hate people. The panic is palpable in some people.
I cannot believe it. I go out and see people and you watch them stepping away from you. You watch them covering up. I had one acquaintance say to me the other day, "We'll all be dead by next year. Have you ever seen anything like this?" And I'm like, are you kidding me? My father just cracked up. My father was just, and it made me think when my father, who's 87 and celebrated his birthday the other day, my father is going, we made it through a heck of a lot worse stuff than this. You know, where is the backbone of these people? And we started talking. You know, this is the generation that's coming up past us. Now, this man wasn't in that generation. He's older, actually, than me, but he has a lot of fear. But the generation below us, right? So we're in our late 50s. They're the trophy generation,
right?
Right. They've gotten everything. They've never had a pickup game in the street. They've never had to, you know, get in a fist fight. I don't think any of them have ever gotten in a fist fight, right? They haven't. They've had to have their parents settle all their disputes.
Conflict resolution they have. That, you know, mine back in the day was if I got in an argument with Billy, we slugged it out. And next thing you know, we were friends again. It was over. These kids don't do that. You're right.
No. So I said that they have never had to deal with anything stressful. So we were just, you and I were just commenting back and forth. And one of the things we said, we had a friend that had a teenage son that had cancer. And she, you know, of course, you're in the hospitals helping the son get over his cancer. You're part of organizations. There's fundraisers. You know all these other people who have kids with cancer. And sometimes kids with cancer die.
It's a fact of life. Not everyone who has it lives.
Advances have been made, but sometimes you have that, right? And she said to me, she said, you know, I am not the first mother to have to deal with their child dying. She said, generations before me, children died in childhood all the time. And then we said, you know, women die giving birth.
Right. Very common. Right. It was a very common thing.
And we said, you know, we've had, those were real struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we didn't have to make up things to be upset about because there was real stuff to be upset about.
Sure. If you look back at the generations earlier than ours, you know, I saw a thing. My grandfather was born in 1900. Mm-hmm. That's the year he was born. And there was somebody put something on there and said, if you were born in 1900, mm-hmm. All right. You got to be 14 years old and World War I was raging across the planet. That was over. And the year it was over, the Spanish flu killed 50 million people on the planet. 8 years later, the Great Depression dropped in.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Depression was over. World War II kicked in. These people, the greatest generation, that's who they are. They have gone through so many things. That my point here for this segment, I want to talk about, everybody gets the horrors of all this. We see the stress out in the street of people now fighting about whether we should open or not open. And I talked about that earlier today, is that if you're that panicked, these people are in such a panic, if you're so afraid that you're going to die because I want to go out to the store, then you should stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And you should live on your savings or whatever the government gives you, however they deign to give you money or whatever your family takes care of you. But I need to go to work.
I need to be normal.
And lots of other people need to go back out now and go back to work. And I think we need to look at that older generation as an inspiration to help us move forward. We were at your father's house the other night, and he invited a couple of his friends over. Proper social distancing outside, sitting 10 feet apart from each other. But these older folks haven't seen anybody in months. And we were sitting around. We were talking about this COVID killings things. And your father said to me, and it was echoed by the other man, John, who was there, who was just as old as him, said, you know what? We lived a good life. We're sick and tired of being in the house. I want to golf. I want to go to a park. I want to go to a store. I lived.
They want to see their grandchildren.
They want to see their grandchildren.
They're afraid to go see their grandchildren.
He says, if it kills me, it kills me. I want to live. And I thought that was amazing. But when you bring up the fact that they've been through so much in their life, this is just another thing to overcome.
Right.
It's not something to be scared to death over. You can be smart about it. but it's not something to be scared to death over.
And that panic, that dread, the terror that people are experiencing and fearing, that's really making me, you know, assess what is it. Now, when our parents went through the Great Depression or they went through World War II, nobody had a crystal ball then when it would be over. Mm-hmm. We even have like a kind of timeline that this is going to be over, right? That we're going to be less at risk.
Sure.
But now you hear their poster going, just because they say we can go back out, it does not mean it's over. We could still catch it. I'm like, we're never going to be free of this. This is like a chain around our necks.
And that was one of the things I was trying to wrap my head around. We're only going to have like 5 or 6 months that's not flu season. Then it's going to start back up again. Did they tell us to lock down again in October?
Right.
Because flu season's coming. Corona's coming back. Lock down again. How are we going to lock down?
Yeah.
How many times can you do this in a person's lifetime that we can all stay home for 6 or 8 weeks without people working? It's physically impossible. So I think some of the points that you were making in our conversation the other day, which I think people would like to hear about, is that our kids are certainly were raised with some of that. I mean, when I lived in this same area, we went out with our BB guns in the morning. We didn't come back till dark at night. We had motorcycles. We got on a motorcycle at 12 years old, and we drove off into the woods, and we rode motorcycles all day. Maybe we came home for lunch. My mother would give us a sandwich. We'd go back out. There was no cell phones. You came home with this. What's the cliche? You come home when the street lights come on.
Right.
There was no phone to call. You just went and lived. And there were losers.
And you relied on yourself. You had to rely on yourself. At a young age, you had to figure out how to get home. If somebody fell down a rocky cliff, you had to figure out how to get them. You didn't go running home to get your mother. We all devised ways to get people. You know that, what was that? That show, The Sandlot? It was done in the 50s, right? But we kind of lived a little bit off the edge of that. We grew up late 60s. Mm-hmm. But there was that kind of independence.
Exactly the right word, independence. You said it before, no pickup games. We had a field around here. It was called the Stony Hill because it was filled with stones and sand. And whatever sport was going on at the time, 20 or 30 kids would show up there. You'd make two teams and you'd play football. You played baseball. You played kickball, whatever you could play. But you just brought a ball and you made a team and somebody would fall down. I remember guys breaking their arms, falling down. They're like, this hurts bad. And they would go home and come back the next day with a cast on. It wasn't the end of the world. But we look at the trophy generation. You know, everybody gets a trophy. We're kind of the same way. I would say in the same neighborhood where I raised my kids, my son's 35 and he's an attorney. And I wouldn't let him take a BB gun to the woods today because it's just, I'm scared to death like everybody else. What's going to happen there? But it's part of the culture. And that's what's made these people so scared to death that I don't know how they're functioning.
I think also we have to look at the fact that the generation below us, we call them nuns. They have no religious affiliation. They have nothing. And when you take God out of your life and you're only looking horizontal at the people around you instead of also looking vertical, when that's out of your experience, you have nothing but I have to rely on these people, and there's people going out and they're getting sick and I'm just so scared, and there's no sense of there's a purpose to this, there's a purpose for your life, you know you're going to make it through, you're going to handle something, you're going to get over it. When we were kids and we had to get over whatever kind of dramatic thing that we called a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember climbing down to the water and we did slide down this like a ravine. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then we kind of all rallied around and we put coats down so we stopped slipping, whatever we could think of, right? You use trial and error.
Right.
You figured stuff out. And now you felt very confident because if I could do that.
Right. Exactly.
The next thing comes up and I can do it. Well, we haven't let our kids build a block tower and have the blocks fall. This is how helicopters...
Right, they're going to win. We're going to make sure that everybody's a winner because you want to do their self-esteem. And I know we talked about that once before. But you made a great point about it's organization. Everything today for these kids is organized from the minute they get up to the minute they go to bed. There is none of that, well, go ahead, walk into the woods with your BB gun and don't shoot your eye out. And if you do shoot your eye out, come home so right. we can fix it and pull the BB out. Now, there's just no thought of that whatsoever. Everything is organized. And back then, nothing was organized. You went out, you figured out what to do, you went and did things.
I mean, your school was organized, right? You went to an organized class, and there was organization in that. But just for that period of time. Mm-hmm. After school, it wasn't very organized. And you had to figure out stuff on your own. And I think because this generation below us has always been, whether it's daycare and school, you know, supervised activities, all of that, never having any of that sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. Because of that, maybe they're less inclined to be able to handle a difficulty. Because yeah. now it has to be organized. When will the government tell us this is over?
And they're trusting it, that the right. government will tell you when this is over, and that's when you'll go back out.
And I don't know if we're, just because we're, you know, we're a little younger than Bill in his hippie days at Woodstock, mm-hmm. but we kind of had a little leftover of that. Don't tell us what to do. We're living,
right.
we're going to live a free life. We're going to figure this out on our own.
And that was our declaration. May 20th is our day. Even though we were saying it facetiously, we were saying it seriously.
Right.
We're done now with this lock-in. We have to take a chance. And it's the truest thing. I said before in the last segment, I drive to New York all the time. I could get killed at any moment between there, 100 miles away to my office. I could get killed any time. Does that keep me home? I see people dead on the road almost every day get killed in these accidents.
Well, they drive on that LI, what is it?
The LIU and the Southern State Parkway.
LIE, right?
LIE, oh yeah. My God. But they do, but I have to drive there too.
Right.
And I see these accidents happen right in front of me. That should scare me to death. I should take the train maybe. No, I have to go to work. So what do? I take a deep breath, I drive as best as I can, and I get to work.
You say a prayer before you go.
Well,
and?
So I like that. Are you horizontal, only looking at the things around you, or are you vertical, looking up to God?
You could be
like
both,
that.
Right?
Of
so
course.
It's kind of, you know, Christians will have a visual of a cross, right? Mm-hmm. Horizontal and vertical. But I think if we're not looking vertical, and this man was older than us that I was talking to that was panicked, we'll be gone next year, we're going to be dead.
Right.
I don't think he's ever gone to church. I've never heard him say anything. So maybe it was for him a lack of a greater power
yeah.
that has things into control. You know, I don't know.
I don't know either, but people stop being so panicked. I get it. It's bad. If you get it, you might die. But you might die from a million other things, too. We can't shut our world off. We have to find a way to get back to the world.
And to encourage each other. Remind
yes.
the younger generation, this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be okay.
Right. Your father and his friends were right. This is something to overcome, not something to climb under a rock for. So that's what we're going to end our show out with today. Be hopeful. Look to the older people in your life and learn some wisdom from them. They got through a lot of stuff. We will get through this. Right? Be hopeful here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, with my lovely co-host, Miss Kathy Pangaro. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.